This evening I'm going to speak on the subject of tolerance. In an analysis of the AA program, we find that humility is the foundation upon which it is necessary to build stable and solid sobriety. We also know that prayer, each in his own way, is the source of power for working the program. And we also learned in AA that the will of God is the directional factor and the guide that will lead us along those steps necessary for that sobriety. It's something like the automobile, you know. The motor itself is humility. The gas that's used to run the motor is prayer. And the steering wheel is the will of God. Now there's one more factor that enters into the efficient and effective running of the machine, and that is a very important factor, the factor of oil. And in the AA program, the oil is the virtue of charity, or love, or call it tolerance. The AA program, after all, consists of human beings. And tolerance is the thing that keeps out friction and heat and difficulties along the way. Now, the how of attaining tolerance or charity is strikingly exemplified in the life of St. John, who was one of the apostles. And to show how resentful a person St. John was, one time they came to a certain Samaritan town. And immediately upon receiving a rebuff by the townspeople, John turned to Christ and he said, "Call down the fire of heaven on them." Yes, destroy them. Now that same St. John, years later, after much association with Christ and undoubtedly prayer and meditation, he wrote his letters, which are a part of the New Testament. And in those letters we see in almost every other paragraph, "Little children, love one another." The same man who years previously had condemned his fellow man and willed vindication to them now writes again and again, "Little children, love one another." And that's the reason, in order to understand what tolerance means, we must first understand what love means. And I'm afraid today there are many wrong definitions of the virtue of love. The modern world, when it uses this term, and so oftentimes rather flippantly, usually ties it up with emotion or lust or gimme, selfishness. Because after all, that's all emotion is. The person who is in love does not necessarily love the other person, because the emotion of love is demanding. It's possessive. It's selfish. Whereas love, on the other hand, is sacrificial, is giving. Now the Romans and the Greeks knew a lot about love. They had very exact terms for the three types of love that is existent in this world. First, in the Latin language, we find the word amor, which means emotion or lust, selfish type love. Then we have the word fraternitas, which means fraternal charity. The love we must have for our fellow man as we meet him along the way. And then we have the word love itself in Latin, caritas. And that's what Paul talks about. That is so giving, as we shall see later on in the talk. It's so sacrificial. A willingness to give. In the Greek, we have the three differentiations. We have the word eros, which is lust, philia, which is fraternal charity, and agape is what the apostles used to describe the love that the first Christians had one for another. And that's what made the pagans of those days look at these men and women, and in astonishment, they would exclaim, "Look at the Christians. See how they love one another." So therefore, in my opinion, and as always, it is only my opinion, true love may be defined as the willingness to give. So many people come and say, "Father, how can I know whether I love God?" That's simple. You want to know how much you love God? How willing are you to serve God? You want to know if you love your husband? You want to know if you love your wife? Ask yourselves, how willing am I to sacrifice for my husband or my wife? Not how much do I demand, or how much does he give me or she give me. You know, it's amazing how many come to any clergyman or any marriage counselor, and the wife comes and she says, "He won't do this. He won't give me that." And the husband comes, "She won't do this. She won't do that." Who loves whom? Love is giving. It is emotion, passion, lust that is demanding. Now about this time, someone's probably raking their minds over and saying, "Now what in the world does a priest know about love? He ain't never been married." Well, I want to tell you something. I'm not a chicken either. I've never laid an egg. Or have I? But you know something? I believe I know more about eggs than any chicken that ever lived. Now, what is the reason for love? The reason for love is the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. That's the reason we have in the preamble to the Constitution of these our United States, that all men are created free and equal, each to the other. And therefore we are to give, to sacrifice for one another, to give without reciprocity, without seeking return. They tell the story that one time a rather wealthy gentleman visited the leper colony down in Louisiana. And as he was taken through this colony of lepers, with all their horrible signs of disease apparent, and as he saw these good nuns there, nursing, cleansing, comforting these poor creatures, he turned to one of the nuns and he said, "Sister, I wouldn't do that for $1,000,000. And the good nun said, "Neither would I. But she would do it for the love of God and the love of her fellow man." Love is sacrifice. Now it all comes down to us from the commandment which tells us, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with thy whole heart, thy whole soul, and all thy strength, and thy neighbor as thyself." Now, why is this? And why are we also told that if we love God, we wouldn't need the commandments? That's true. St. Augustine says, love God and do what you will. What does that mean? Well, look, if we love God, we wouldn't offend him, would we? So we wouldn't need commandment 1, 2, or 3. If we loved our neighbor, we wouldn't offend them. So we wouldn't need commandment 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So we wouldn't need the commandment. Therefore, if we would all acknowledge that all men are equal one to another and brothers under the common burden of humanity, then it wouldn't make any difference to you or to me whether the other fellow was black or white, or rich or poor, or Christian or pagan or Jew, or learned or ignorant, likable or unlikable, Protestant or Catholic, success or failure, drunk or sober, yes, slipping or staying on the program, because each and every one would be equal to me, a child of God, even as you and I. If that were true, we wouldn't have any unjust criticism, no intolerance, no bigotry, no dissension, no rash judgment, no condemnation. Wouldn't it be wonderful? We'd have heaven on earth. But of course, we're still on the earth. And human nature being what it is, selfishness creeps in. Time after time, and again there's trouble. Now let's analyze some of these troubles and problems and difficulties that come into human lives as the result of the lack of charity. And first we have intolerance. You hear a lot of discussion in AA about tolerance. What is tolerance? Well, tolerance, according to my definition, is the minimum fulfillment of the law of love. If I can't love a person, if I'm not willing to sacrifice or do for a person, I at least can tolerate him. I can permit it to exist. That is tolerance. I permit even though I may not agree. God tolerates evil, but he loves the cause of evil, the sinner. Intolerance, on the other hand, is the refusal to associate with or refrain from criticizing someone else because that other person is different from me. Because he's black and I'm white, because he's rich and I'm poor, or because he's a Protestant and I'm a Catholic, or because he's a Catholic and I'm a Protestant. Doesn't make any difference. I refuse to permit his existence in my mind because he's different from me. And therefore, I think I am better than he. Whereas if we are going to have the virtue of love and charity, the minimum fulfillment will be at least to permit him to exist. Let him go. He has equal rights, at least, with me. And so the preamble of the Constitution was based on the minimum fulfillment of the law of charity. Now, how far can we go at the other extreme? Well, there's no limit. God told us, the greater love than this no man has than he gives his life for his friend. Of course, again, with human nature coming into the picture, most people don't like to go even one hundredth that far. Of course, there was a little boy in school one day to show how far we must go in this law of charity, and he got in a fight and he came in with a black eye, but the other kid was sent home. He was so beaten up. So the teacher started to take this boy with the black eye, and she was going to punish him. And she said, don't you know that it says in the scriptures that if someone hits you on one cheek, you should turn the other? The little boy said, yeah, I know that. But it don't say what to do after that. Now there's a difference between love and like. I can love someone and not like them. I can like them and not love them. Because like, again, is based on emotion. Love is founded in the will of man. Did you ever see husband and wife who fight like cats and dogs? Year in and year out, yet they stay together. Why? They love each other, but they don't like each other. That's true. That's the reason in the article that appeared in the Fortune magazine a few years back about Alcoholics Anonymous, it ended up with that very pertinent advice. Well, you don't have to like the SOB, you have to at least love him. Like has to do with emotion, love with the will. And the minimum is tolerance. Remember, in the groups of AA, we're going to find people that is merely a cross-section of humanity in the population in which you live. I have a pet theory about that. I maintain that in AA, we have a little accentuated cross-section. And if you can adjust to AA, you can adjust to any section of life anywhere. That's the reason in the AA book it tells us that we learn in AA that we never look down on. The lowliest of God's creatures are the worst of man's mistakes. For there, but for the grace of God, go I. Now, another form of intolerance is intolerance of circumstances. First, there's external circumstances. The boss, or the family, or the job. It irritates me. Well, the answer is I can tolerate it. And if I'm an alcoholic, I better tolerate it, or I better change the job. Because if we don't, we're going to have a disturbance emotionally inside, and that's going to grow and grow and grow, and someday it's going to blossom and bloom in the four beautiful roses. In circumstances of life, we can't change, we must tolerate them. God permits it, therefore we will accept it. We don't like it, but we will accept it. Then internal intolerance, tension, nervousness, sickness, whatever it may be, the only solution for the alcoholic is tolerance. Permit it to be, accept it, and that in itself will lead to a solution. Problems, particularly the unsolvable problems. You know, those kind that we have at least one of. The solution for the unsolvable problem? Accept it. Tolerate it. Then it's solved, as far as we're concerned. Then we have intolerance of religion. That goes by the name of bigotry. And I want to make this remark. There never has existed a bigot that has one iota of love or charity or tolerance in his heart. Bigotry is based on me looking down on you because of your race or your religion or your color. Of course, a lot of people will come along and say, well, now after all, it's my conviction. Do you want to know what the difference between conviction and bigotry is? Conviction is something that you can talk about without getting mad. Bigotry is not. They tell the story in one of the groups that after the meeting, speaking of bigotry, a fellow was introduced to a new member and his name was O'Leary. And this other fellow's name was O'Shanahan. So Mr. O'Shanahan thought to himself, well, gee, maybe Irish, maybe he's a Catholic. He said, hey, by the way, are you Catholic? The fellow says, Lord knows, it's bad enough to be an alcoholic. Do you know where prejudice comes from, upon which bigotry is based? Prejudice comes from two little Latin words, prejudicium, and that means judgment before knowledge. They have an old saying, I think it was old Confucius who said, that he who knows all would forgive all. And there's a lot of wisdom. He who knows all would forgive all. Prejudice means judgment before I know what I'm talking about. Then another type of intolerance is criticism, gossip, and talebearing. And here, I'm sorry to say, in AA, their name is Legion. As the pagan poet Horace wrote centuries ago, fama quae crescit e undo, which means gossip, which so grows as it goes, and how it grows and how it goes, around and around. You know, there's so many people in this world that seem to have all the time, day in and day out, nose trouble. They've got to find out something about their neighbor and talk about it. They tell the story of one such individual who every time someone got married, she marked the calendar. If I loved my neighbor, I wouldn't criticize them. I wouldn't gossip. Whenever anyone comes to you and say, hey, did you hear? Yes, isn't it awful? Sure, he's in the hospital. He must have had a slip. Why would he be in the hospital? You can put down in your book that man or that woman hasn't an iota of fraternal charity, nor of love, nor of tolerance of his neighbor. Then another form of intolerance is irresponsibility of sponsorship in AA. There's so much of that, you know. We sidestep that with so many excuses. Or perhaps we do go on 12-step call if the person is an attractive personality. Or if he happens to be in my social stratum. Or if he's my color of skin or my religion. But if he's down on the other sides of the track, call somebody else. Such a person has no love. No tolerance, no understanding of his fellow man. The reason so many do that is because, after all, time given to a new man demands sacrifice. And love is sacrifice. And then in our financial affairs, there's a lot of lack of charity and the love of our neighbor. Here we are in AA, a year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. We're doing fine. God has been good to us, but we won't share those shekels with our neighbor. We don't realize that if we don't share that loot, we're liable to lose it some of these days in a grand and glorious binge. It has happened. And here again, I always repeat that it is amazing. To me, it is the enigma of AA. How an alcoholic, when he sobers up in AA, becomes so tight financially. I've told this story many times, but it's true. The same fellow, the same gal, who at the tavern or in the bar laid down a $20 bill and said, zap the house! Buy them all, Rick, on me! Now he comes to AA, and he becomes as tight as he ever was drinking. And when the group asks for a little help, or someone is in need, and he takes that 2 bits from his pocket, you can hear his elbow squeak. Charity, love is giving. Tolerance of my neighbor means I accept the fact that there are many people who are not blessed as I am, but the reason I'm blessed is to share with the one who is not blessed. This is a give program, remember? The more I give, the more God in turn will give to me, because love is giving. And then even in our prayers, intolerance creeps in. Me pray for him? Pray for him. Not too long ago, a young lady came to me, I will say young lady, pointedly. And she had a very bitter resentment against her husband, from whom she was separated. And she told me, she says, Father, I'll never give it up. Of course, she was having a lot of trouble. She's doing a lot of slipping. And I tried to point out to her, I said, well, there's only one solution. It's either or. Either forgive and forget, practice love instead of resentment, give, say things nice about him, pray for him, or else you're going to get drunk again. Now take your choice. Oh, Father, I'll never do that. Okay, get drunk again. Love is giving. Resentment is hating, and hatred is the other extreme from love. Now, St. Paul has a very beautiful paragraph telling us all about the virtue of love, the virtue of charity, which includes tolerance. And it goes like this. If I speak with the tongues of men and have not charity, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And if I should have prophecy and should know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I should have all faith so that I could move mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. If I should distribute all my goods to the poor, and if I should deliver my body to be tortured, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Now someone's going to ask right there, what do you mean? How can I give all my goods to the poor and not have charity? But that's easy. There's lots of people in this world who freely give from a purpose of vanity and egotism and big-shot-itis. We see that in the papers every day. So-and-so has given so much to the poor. The Lord help that newspaper if they didn't put his name and picture in. He has not charity. Charity, St. Paul says, is kind. Charity envieth not. It dealeth not perversely. It is not puffed up. It is not ambitious. It seeketh not her own. It is not provoked to anger. It thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth with the truth. Unquote. Now let's take each one of those. First, charity or love, tolerance is patient. Never in a hurry. Why? Because such a person knows that all evil is transitory, that God in his own time will eliminate evil, so he tolerates the same as God does. How much we could learn from this in our groups. When somebody comes along and says, oh, look what he's doing, he's going to ruin AA. He's not going to hurt AA. If what he's doing is evil, it will be eliminated in its time. If it is good, then God forbid that I should interfere. Let it go. Charity, love is patient. Charity is kind. You know, I think one of the greatest statements about Christ in the whole scriptures that gives us a world of thought is the statement that says that he went around doing good. He went doing good, which is merely saying one act of love following another. Then charity envieth not. It dealeth not perversely. Jealousy and envy are the tributes which mediocrity pay to success. Charity is not competitive. It never looks for reciprocity. Charity gives for the joy of giving, the joy of sacrifice. Charity is not puffed up. Why? Because the charitable man, the tolerant man, is humble. He knows his own limitations. So how can he criticize and look down on somebody else? How can he put himself above anybody else? Charity is humble. Charity is not ambitious. You know who are ambitious? The individuals who love the glory of men more than they love the glory of God. That's the ones who are ambitious. The ones who love God and their neighbor, they are not ambitious. They are not, they seeketh not their own. The true master, we are told many times throughout history, is the servant. And love is the willingness to serve. Now, no one ever loved themselves too little. Don't be afraid of that. But we are told, bear ye one another's burdens. Love or charity is not provoked to anger. You know, we can't take hatred out unless we put love in. You can't wish away hatred. You can't wish away dislikes and resentments. Love alone, injected in their place, will replace hatred and dislikes and resentments. If somebody makes me angry, or makes me resentful, or causes hatred to begin to grow, there's only one solution, and that is an action of love for that person. I can't wish it away. So many people do that, you know. They say, oh, gee, I wish I didn't dislike so-and-so. But every time she gives me that, I'm so-and-so, blah, blah. Well, she can wish until kingdom come. And it won't do any good until she does something good for that person. Pray for them. Sacrifice. Give for them. That will eliminate the negative attitude of hatred and resentment. Charity thinketh no evil. You know why? Because a charitable person is fully conscious of his own faults, so he doesn't judge his neighbor. Do you know who does? The ones who like to pacify their own conscience. They think by talking about your faults, thinking evil and speaking evil about you, that justifies them. Whereas in reality, we know we can never judge by externals. We never know what is in the heart of that man or that woman who walks in that door of the AA meeting. You may see him or her now, a very disheveled, pitiable looking sight. But perhaps the heart and the motives and the sincerity and the tries that have been in his or her life were 1,000 times more than have ever been in our life. I often think that. I see so many in AA have so much trouble, and I think to myself, my goodness, I would never make the effort that they are making, trying to stay sober. I have been blessed. The only reason I never slipped was purely because of the grace of God. I know that. And therefore, no matter what I see, no matter what I know about a person, what they have done or are doing, I don't seem to be able in any way to judge them. God forbid. I have too much to answer for myself, and God has been too good to me. Now St. Paul tells us, there remain faith, hope, and charity, these three. And the greatest of these is charity. Have you ever read about the last judgment in the scriptures? It describes what will happen on that day on several occasions in the scriptures. And it's amazing to see that the description that is given has to do with nothing else but charity. Now notice, we are told that when we appear before our judge, that he's going to tell us one of two things. First, either depart from me because I was hungry and you gave me not to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me not to drink. I was a stranger and you took me not in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me not. I was in prison and you came not to see me. All against charity. It doesn't say depart from me because you got drunk, because you hurt someone else in an accident, because you stole. Not that those things are not as responsible evils as they always have been, but it's amazing to see how the only thing that Christ mentions here is charity. And to the other soul, he will say, when I was hungry, you gave me to eat. When I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. When I was a stranger, you took me in. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick, you visited me. When I was in prison, you came to see me. And I'm going to add one of my own. When I was drunk, you sobered me up. With all due reverence. And to that person he says, therefore, insofar that you did it to one of these, the least of my fellow men, you did it to me. So come ye blessed of my Father, and possess you the kingdom of heaven, which was prepared from all eternity by Almighty God for those who love Him. I'll see you all there. God bless you.